Michiamo apura kanu apura ikaitnut, neye egua da, medinde o jirapo kwesi ra nehem pata akan, akwamumaina maruka etipimu o jirapo. That means greetings to all apura kani apura ikaitni people, meaning Africans, black people. Today is egua day, marketplace day. My name is Ojirapo Kwesi ra nehem pata akan, Ojirapo of the Akwamu mine, Amaruka etipimu, the Akwamu nation in North America. So today, of course, is our Egua Marketplace Day. This is a day when we introduce Apurakani, Apuraikaini African business owners, those who provide products and services to the Apurakani, Apuraikaini online, the community, products and services that are, of course, of benefit to our people, also those who share our ancestral value. So as we talk about, when we've talked about in previous shows, when we talk about Amain Sesio, which is the Akan term for nation building, nation restoration, in Akwamu Mind, the Akwamu Nation in North America, we deal with seven principal aspects of Amain Sesio. If you're going to have a nation, an Amain, and reestablish a nation, restore a nation, which we are, as Apurakani, Apuraikaini people here in the West, you must have methods of food production and preservation. You must have methods of curing disease. You can't have a nation where you can't feed yourself, of course, but you can't have a nation if you can feed yourself, but then you can't cure disease. You can't be dependent on the enemy to cure your disease. You have your own nation, but you can't cure disease. So you have to have methods of curing disease. You have to have a military structure to defend the nation that you've established. You have to have the institutionalization of values, whether it's institutions, physical structures, but also institutions such as trainings, which is institutionalizing our values. Cultural institutions such as holidays and ritual practices that transfer knowledge and transfer the values of the culture. That's institutionalizing knowledge. So whether it's through schooling, training, engineering, or training for agriculture, or training for methods of curing disease, or training for military science, you have to have institutions that transfer knowledge and institutionalize those values. You have to have systems, sound systems of governance and jurisprudence so that we can govern ourselves so that you have a nation, you can feed yourself, you can cure yourself of disease, you can defend the nation through a military structure. You transfer values of the culture. But then if people get into a minor argument or major dispute and can't govern themselves, then those disputes cause a fracturing of the nation. They self-destruct or implode and make ourselves, targets for the enemy who's always trying to, attack the nation from the outside in various ways, whether it's chemical, biological, military, or whatever. So we have to have sound systems of governance and jurisprudence. We also, of course, have to be able to clothe ourselves. We have to be able to establish and build our own homes on acquired land. So it's not just, land and clothing, food, clothing, and shelter and security. It is food, of course, systems of developing food, preserving food, systems of cultivation and preservation of food, systems of curing disease, a military structure, a system of institutions, institutionalizing values, governmental systems, government and jurisprudence, acquired land, building homes on acquired land, and of course, clothing ourselves and so forth. So those seven major aspects of Amain Sesio, nation building, restoration, all of us have a role in one or more of those areas. Some people will be drawn to one area more than they're drawn to the other area. Some people will be drawn primarily to one area and secondarily or tertiary in another area, in other areas. So some people will be focused on food preservation, food cultivation. Some people will be focused on natural medicine. Some people will be focused on establishing government, pulling people together to mitigate disputes, design a structure where we can live in a harmonious fashion. as well as dealing with contracts and dealing with other nations as well. Some people will be dealing with engineering, the building of homes, acquisition of land, civil engineering, mechanical engineering, and so forth. Some people will be focused on textiles, dealing with clothing. Some people will be dealing with military science, of course. So in various aspects, every Apuraikani, Apuraikaitini person, child, and adult has a role to play in one or more of these seven divisions or aspects or principal values arenas of Amainsesu nation building. So when we have our guests who come onto the show, the products and services and the organizations that they have developed and that they operate through, we want them to, you know, choose people who are dealing in these various aspects of Amainsesu nation building. And of course, our guest tonight deals in more than one of these areas, a number of these areas, and we're very appreciative of that. Before we bring our guest on, for those who want to make a comment, have a question, if you're in the chat room, you have to log in order to make a comment or if you want to ask a question. If you are on the phone line, just hit the number 1 to raise your hand and we can, you know, bring you on for your comment or question. We will be, again, check the website. Just a quick announcement. We will be back in Philadelphia first weekend in September. We'll be putting the detailed information about that most likely later tonight, so keep checking the website for that, odirafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A, F as in free, O.com. You can also check us out on our Ning site, apuraka-apuraikaet.ning.com. We always update everyone on the Ning site, and of course we're also on Facebook, apuraka.apuraikaet, and we also have a Facebook group, Akanfo Nanasom, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestral Religion. We also, for those who are new to the show or maybe missed the show yesterday, Monday, we have 3 shows now every week. At first it was 2, but now we have 3 on Joada, Benada, and Awukuda or Kuada, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. All of them are at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Joada, we have our new weekly show, Akanfo Nanasom, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestral Religion, where we focused on specifically Akan Ancestral Religion. And we also make comparisons, of course, to other ancestral religious practices, those of the Yoruba, Akan, Ebe, Igbo, and so forth. But our focus there is Akan Ancestral Religion from its authentic, ancient authentic practice. On Benada or Abenada Tuesdays at 9 p.m., we have Ojida Purification, where we deal with Apuraikani, Apuraikaitini ancestral religion in general. We delve into these texts, different issues dealing with ancient Kemet, ancient Kanak, other ancestral religious issues dealing with cosmology and how we ought to incorporate these things into our lives and also reject the nonsense that has been polluting our ancestral religious practices. So we go into a great deal of information on those days and on that day. And then, of course, on our Awukuda or Akuada Wednesday, we have Egua Marketplace Day. So on a weekly basis, 3 shows, Joda, Benada, Awukuda, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. All right. So we want to introduce our guest, Mama Mawusi Ashakir. Mama Mawusi is the owner of the Body Temple Institute. She's a healeress. They certify our people in holistic medicine. She's an educatrice dealing with Apuraikani, Apuraikaitini homeschooling. They have the Sovereign Foods Collective where they deal with organic farming, heirloom seeds, and a number of other things. So we just want to bring our guests on.
Yes. Oh.
Michiabo. Mama, are you there?
Yes, Ekabo, and greetings, love, light, all of those. I am so grateful to be here. I was just sitting here and listening to the 7 principles and feeling so full and feeling just like I know that I am in the right place. I'm so grateful, honored, and proud to be here as a representative of African self-preservation. And to you, Odira Fokwesi, I'm so grateful for your work in resurrecting our knowledge of our genetic inheritance and putting it in the forefront and priority of your life and our lives so that we know there are things that you have sorted out for us and that you have made very clear for us so that we can now live our life in authentic African, as an authentic African, African being. Real talk. I'm grateful for that. I am a representative of our genetic ancestry, and so is all of us. But as we stand here, we are seeking as ancestors in this present moment to preserve ourselves, to fight to live. And in that fight to live, my main objective is to bring back into the forefront of our memory our ability to heal ourselves and to utilize those natural elements of earth, air, fire, water, and the force of nature, which is also human, in order for us to preserve ourselves and sustain ourselves. I've created institutions for that. The Body Temple Institute harnesses herbal and nutritional information for melanated beings specifically and with priority. We recognize that it will be a revolution for us to put ourselves in priority and for us to hold ourselves with prejudice. So with that being the case, we cannot expect others who see themselves in priority. We cannot expect the Urjiwadifo, Yorugu, whom hold themselves with priority, to put our health first, or to put our babies first. So I was trained by a master herbalist, naturopathic physician, and a midwife. And I am a master herbalist, naturopathic physician, nutritionist, and a midwife. I believe that our babies should be born into our hands. I also, because of that, because my babies were born in a very special way, I believe also that they should be educated by myself and their father. So with that being the case, I began to develop our own African curriculum for our children and began to create resources for our children and distribute the resources in our communities for our community's African children. And I did that started that in 1997. So then the web presence came along in 2012. Myself and Ina and Jadeka Carmo partnered and created the Akokona Homeschool Resource Center. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so excited. Please forgive me. Go ahead.
No, it's all good. Let out there. We just honored to have you on, and we really mean that. When we say we're honored, we're not just saying it in a, just a cliche fashion. We're honored to have you. We appreciate all the work that you're doing, and we want to get to divide it up so we can get to everything. We only have 2 hours, but we want to get to as much as we can. So yes, we're going to get to the herbalist information. We want to get to the homeschooling network. We want to get to the Sovereign yes. Foods Collective. We want to get to the midwifery. So let's start with the – how about starting with the certification for herbalism, holistic medicine, naturopathy.
Yes.
So how did you first get involved? What led you to get involved in that, and how did you develop the certification? What led up to all of that in the beginning?
Well, yeah, with the Body Temple Institute, I forever have been using herbs since, I would say, 94, and dabbling and then coming into consciousness with my liberty, my diet, with the foods that I consume, and then utilizing healing foods and healing herbs as far back as 1994. And as I continue to use them and then coming into consciousness, I realized that they were literally a catalyst that could help us to they would literally help us to not have to go in to hospitals, not have to overutilize antibiotics and things like that. They would literally aid us better in sustaining our life and even supporting our melanin. So with that, I began to use them on everything, on myself, on my children, on the people in my communities, on everything from ear infections to major wounds and cuts, on burns and things like that. So I have developed this awareness, and then once I had my baby, my third child, at home with my teacher, and she utilized herbs exclusively to facilitate my birth and my recovery. I was in love, and you find your clear, you know what I'm saying? This is your place where you can utilize them with some intelligence and some knowledge. So then, in getting involved in Yoruba in 99, did I begin to understand how the Orisha used Ewe also in spiritual matters. See, that is important, too, because herbs of a plant's core field is very spiritual, you know. And so with using these herbs spiritually and physically, on a physical level, I learned and taught and trained and studied with other teachers as well as my own all the way up until 2007, for which I began to share and also not only study, but utilize them to heal my greater community as well as my family, and then also deliver babies, utilizing them. I've been delivering since 2001. And then I will go on to decide to take my knowledge and not only share but train apprentices. So what I do on the Body Temple, which has been up since 2009, is to train apprentice herbalists. And in the future, soon future, I'll be posting up a naturopathic physician curriculum and certification. But because we must be the hand that heals ourselves, that's my axiom. We must be the hand that heals ourselves, and the revolution will not be hospitalized. It's irrational to take ourselves to our open enemy and ask them, beg them to save our lives. There are many things that we can do to maintain our own health. There are many things that we can do to secure our own vitality. And that's one way that I support all of us as Africans, is to put out free information, but in addition to that, to have certifications for those who know that inside of you that you're a healer. Then we can do that program. We can walk the path to honing the healer in you, and to hone the tools of healing, which is the utilization of herbs and food and movement, breath, to heal ourselves.
Absolutely.
That's what the Body Temple. Yes, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. You said the Body Temple.
The Body Temple Institute, just wanted to tell this location. It's located at HTTP. TheBodyTemple.ning.com, and this is where you'll find our certification program, Master Herbalist Certification Program.
So TheBodyTempleInstitute.ning.com, right?
Okay, yes, TheBodyTemple.ning.com.
Now, is the Body Temple or the Body Temple Institute?
It is the Body Temple.
Oh, the Body Temple. Okay, I'm going to put it in the chat room for everybody on the phone. In the chat room, you'll see it, but on the phone is www.thebodytemple.ning.com, because I had the wrong First, I have the Body Temple Institute.
It doesn't have a www. It's just HTTP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just HTTP,
okay.
thebodytemple.ning.com. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Let me put that in there. Okay, so everybody understands. So not only you're teaching, of course, but people are being certified. They can become apprentices. They can learn about holistic health. We already have one question, so and you're going to get some questions. So already, there's a question in the chat room. Is there holistic medicine for severe arthritis?
Yes. The use of devil's claw or cat's claw for inflammation is needed. And also the changing of the diet to include to exclude fried foods and hydrogenated oils from your diet completely, and to include whole oils with omega-3, 6s, and 9s in them, because your joints need those oils. In addition to that, you would use, you need to gain Boswellian cream. Boswellian really is frankincense, but it is made into a product or a cream that can be rubbed on the specific area. Also, MSM cream can be used to rub on the area as a pain reliever.
MSM?
MSM, that is correct. And glucosamine,
okay.
Glucosamine also. MSM and glucosamine. Also, I want that person to drink more water, lots of water. You need to be drinking upwards of 64 ounces of water in order to clean off the debris from the joints. A lot of times there are toxins settle into those joints, causing those joints to become irritated and angry, especially in rheumatoid arthritis. You want to make sure that stays clean and clear. It stays clear. Your body, your bloodstream stays, continues to flow. Yeah, also cut, that's the other thing, exclude from your diet sugars that are processed. All white sugars, all white flours, all high fructose corn syrup. A major change is required of you because it is your bones. When we're dealing with our bones, we're dealing with Obatala, we are dealing with Osir, we are dealing with the divinities that deal a lot with our foundation and that deep level of genetic information. And so with that, and that's when you think of Asari, you deal with the underworld. Well, with that, that's got a lot to do with the structure of our bones. So with that, focus in on those prayers, rituals, and things that are said or Obatala.
Okay. Now, he had a follow-up question. What about fish oil, omega-3 fatty acids, moringa,
yes,
and kelp?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Kelp is for iodine, which works very well for your thyroid and things like that. And, yes, you can use kelp because your body needs it. It is a whole structure. So, absolutely. Utilizing kelp, utilizing also spirulina and all of those seaweeds will nurture and nourish spongy bone marrow, which creates red blood cells. Absolutely. Moringa is an all-over healer. It is a healer for the entire body. It's a strengthener, a core strengthener. So I certainly want to say for you to use moringa in general, everyday use. Everyone can use moringa. They are not necessarily specific to arthritis. That's why, in regards to everyday healing, in regards to everybody, we should all be using it. In addition to that, moringa originates in Africa. Because it originates in Africa, we have genetic memory that will awaken to the genetic information of moringa. You know, it will unlock and make accessible, you know, that genetic information moringa does. So we definitely want to be using moringa as in general as a whole of Africa. Yes.
Now, I had a question about the moringa as well. How, when we talk about using it consistently, how extensive, like, you know, some things, for example, like echinacea, you may use it for mm-hmm. a certain number of days, but then you would stop, you wouldn't continue, but how, what duration can you use moringa? Is it a daily basis for, like, 30 days in a row, or how do you process
yes.
that?
There are some herbs that are very strong to the extent that they are invasive, to the extent that technically they are a poison. For instance, poke, golden seal, things like that. What the caution would be is that if it is very potent to that degree. Moringa is in a different category. I categorize moringa as an adaptogen. It also is one that is a fortifier, and it is for the fortification of your body. It is not, and to, for it to be used in a small amount daily, large amounts, sometimes in some people it can be an irritant. So you have to be concerned of. My concern would be if it is right for this person rather than if it is something that can be used every day. I feel that it can be used every day, and I have used it every day. I have given it every day for someone who has diabetes, and they have not had to use any insulin. I have used it as a strengthener, and it helps that body to do its daily elimination for those people who have issues with even dealing with kidney disorders and things like that. So I feel that it is a daily strengthener. I also, my teacher also has, who my I have a teacher who was an ethnobotanist, Ibaez. He also utilized it daily. So that's my research. I found on people and through my teachers that it has been utilized daily with success.
Okay.
My only concern was if it is right for the person. If that person doesn't accept it, you might feel some tingling in the back of the throat or in the ear. Then that way that would mean that it's not correct. It might not be right for you or your body chemistry at that time.
Okay. So now I had a question about, now you mentioned Obatala, and you mentioned the Orisha, Yoruba tradition. And
yes.
The question I have is, you know that there are people getting involved in naturopathic medicine, holistic medicine, and everything else. And
yes.
Very often, even for our people, we'll just, you know, whatever the whites and arrows strings say, we just swallow it and we run with it. So
yes.
The question I have is, how did embracing your ancestry in the Yoruba tradition, how does that inform the way you approach holistic medicine?
When I consider melanin and its natural state of being, our bodies are organisms, not mechanisms. And because our body is an organism, not a mechanism, our body requires organic food. Our body requires organic. Just a minute, let me put my charger in. I don't want to lose the call. Okay, forgive me. Because our body is a natural organism and not a mechanism, we must feed our body natural food. And if we are to heal, then we must also heal our body and help our bodies to eliminate and regenerate with natural herbs and natural foods. So that is my key. When it comes to spirituality, we are not just physical vehicles. We are multidimensional beings. And dealing with an African spirituality, it answers those, it answered that psychology. It answered that spirituality. It answers that spiritual being self. And to utilize, to call upon it, to utilize it, to employ it as a means of healing is necessary. A lot of the issues that we're dealing with are spiritual ills. I guess if you want to use the Urge Waterfall concept, you know, the concept, that's our psychology, what they say is our psychology creates our physiology. But we have known this for more than 5,000 years. Known this for more than 5,000 years. We've known this for more than 5,000 years. There is an Everest papyrus that is 3,500 years B.C. that speaks of what they may call, where it speaks of ritual. You know, they may call incantations, but yet references to the divinity and references to rituals to do for the divinities in response to an ill, in response to toothache, in response to bone injury, in response to brain surgery. So I am not only a believer, but I know that this is a true way of healing, to heal not only the physical body, but also the spirit.
Made out there. And I know, and you mentioned, like, for example, you mentioned Moringa and it being coming from the continent, and you mentioned how it's, we're genetically connected to those plants that come out of the ground of the continent. So can you speak a little bit about that genetic connection we have to the plant life?
Yes. You know how one of the things that we have to understand is these Europeans have educational curriculum for ethnobotany, meaning that they understand that our place of origin affects the plant life that we are indigenous to. And one of the things I love is one time you answered a question and you talked about and we are indigenous to wherever we have grown the food. We grew the food, breathed in the pollen in that same area, and we consumed the food from that same area. We indigenized ourselves to the earth at that point. Well, where we originated from matters. If you know about Pangaea, quote unquote Pangaea, and how all of the continents were linked together, then you understand also that there are some plants that are in Brazil that are also in Ghana, in the Congo, that are also in Brazil, XYZ, right? Well, this is a very trip. I mean, to conceive of that there are certain herbs that are found in different geographical locations. I'm bringing that point up because it's a really big concept that we as Africans very scarcely touch on, especially we as African herbalists very scarcely touch on. But because of that, plants like cat's claw that grow in Brazil also by a different name also grow in Africa. Now, what these plants do, our bodies have a mitochondrial DNA that has such a long memory that certain foods are attached to certain areas where we were indigenized to. For instance, when we lived in the South, in the Deep South, and we grew the food there and ate the food, consumed the food, we are indigenized to there. And when we eat that food again, like, let's say, black-eyed peas, our bodies, our genetic information, our genetic mitochondrial DNA remembers that time frame. But when we eat or consume the herb from Africa, directly from Africa, such as moringa or even circe, then our genetic information also recalls that period in time. So it recalls older DNA. It recalls the older information. So then we can reach back further and remember the wisdom from further back in our genetic information. So in America, what's interesting is that the Western herbal tradition is one that is what they call eclectic, or basically what they've taken from other cultures. So you might get herbs from Peru, maca. You might get herbs from the far north of Britain and Scandinavia, which is echinacea. You might get golden seal, which may be from somewhere else, American ginseng, Korean ginseng. You know, it's from everywhere. But you're not indigenous to those. You've not indigenized yourself at any time to those places. So with that, your body just has this kind of limbo because it's eating food from places that it's never even been. And it didn't record. It does record that genetic information from that food that you consume. However, it does not spark memory. But when I got the herbs from Uganda, which were moringa and searcy, and also an antibiotic formula from Black Herbal, I could literally feel the connection, and I knew the strength and potency of the herbs. I could know the strength and potency of the herbs, not know intellectually, but know intuitively the potency of that moringa, of those herbs, from a place for which I can remember. You understand? Does that make sense? Because it's not a far-fetched overstanding. It's not a far-fetched place to stand. It really is a truth, and we should reach back to these African places for our herbs and use them to not just heal a specific issue, but to reconnect to our ancient wisdom.
Absolutely. That's like eating and you know, using herbs as a form of ancestral and deity communication, just by consuming those.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now we have a caller who has a question. Okay, Michiawo, number 6482. You had a question or comment?
Yeah. Thank you. I was listening. Children in the back.
Are you just listening? Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So we want to. So people should know that they can contact you via the website for consultations, but then they can also contact you via the website if they want to be interested in the certification aspect of the program.
Awesome.
So,
absolutely.
Now, the next piece we want to get directly related to that, of course, is you have the Sovereign Foods Collective. We want people to understand what that is, because that's something that's extremely important, one of those principal values of Amai Tesu Nation Building. So, what is the Sovereign Foods Collective, and how did it come into fruition? How did you all, what pushed you in that direction to organize that collective?
You know, we were, one of the things that is a part of our herbal studies curriculum is how to grow herbs. Because if you are growing herbs for the sake of healing, then you must know the information on that herb, the genetic, the energetic framework of that herb. That's important. And in doing and being and participating in that plant's growth and development for the eventual programming, you know, assigning the divinity of herbs and plants deals with the programming of herbs and the utilization of herbs for multiple disorders and diseases. So with that, and spiritual and physical. So with that, we're growing herbs. So we also, though, began to address the issue with genetically modified seeds and the fact that our food was genetically infiltrated and genetically perverted. So because of such, we wanted to talk about, we're talking about health, and we definitely have to talk about securing our own genetic defense. And so what we did was organize a seed-saving collective for one, what we would do was find heirloom seeds and share them amongst each other, number one. Number two, we would grow our own food in order to ensure its purity. So,
can I ask you? Can you define for the audience the heirloom seeds?
Absolutely. Heirloom seeds are seeds that have been have not been genetically modified, have not been genetically engineered. Also, they have been passed down from person to person, generation to generation. Thus, they've been passed down from ground to hand and hand to hand to hand. They have not been one of those seeds that have been perverted in any way and came out of a laboratory, but they actually came from, in all cases, a wild plant or wild plant that may have been naturally cultivated. So you have several different concepts. There's a hybrid concept, and a lot of times people feel that the hybrids amongst Monsanto, hybrids amongst European companies is an evil thing. But in Kemet and in Africa, all parts, and in our native places here, we hybridize our plants also. That simply means that even the birds and the butterfly may mix pollen of two flowering plants. That may be tomato, and you will, instead of getting a Roma-sized tomato and a beefsteak-sized tomato, you might get something in between. That's a natural hybridization process, just because the tomato recognizes its genetic information, and it recognizes the genetic information of tomato in the other flower, and it may mix, even though they are not the same breed of tomato, they are still tomato. Now, if the hybridization process, I just want to kick in this one last point about that, is that if a butterfly or a bee goes from a tomato to a squash, it will not mix that because the genetic information is not the same breed. So it won't make a tomato squash. You know what I'm saying? It won't do that. Nature is very intelligent, and those simple blends are simple. I mean, that is two different tomatoes, but yet tomatoes, but it does not mix species. That's what I should say. Then there is the genetic engineered. The genetically engineered plant, or what would be called in hybrids, if you are purchasing them online or purchasing them, and it may say hybrid, it may say a F1 hybrid, it may say hybrid in general. Those are not, in some cases, a lot of people really demonize those too, but they are not as bad, I would say, how about that, as genetically engineered or genetically modified organisms. Genetically engineered is a plant that will have animal genetics, or even plants of a different species mixed into the seed of a potato or corn or something like that. Then also a genetically modified one will be spliced with another. It won't be spliced with something that is outside of its species. For instance, genetically engineered can be fish genes mixed in with plant genes. Genetically modified is plant genes with plant genes in general. However, the devil has gotten freaky with his Frankensteinness. So it can be today, yeah, it can be on to a whole nother level. We seek to purchase hybrid seeds, and we specifically, with priority, purchase hybrid seeds exclusively, and we'll try to get them wherever, or try to trade them with other Africans, and store them. So the Sovereign Food Collective was stepped off the ground as the Black Seed Collective, actually. And the intention was to store our seeds and have them, have as many as we possibly can, because with social and economic collapse, we cannot allow them to starve us. Self-preservation is important. African self-preservation is vitally important. It's so important. that we have to secure our own food supply. And we also have to secure a food supply that has not been perverted with pesticides. So growing our own food is key, is a key element and a key strategic weapon for our own African self-preservation and self-defense.
Absolutely. And now, and can you comment on how, for example, those genetically modified organisms, how they impact the incidence of, or the increased incidence of, like, degenerative diseases, like various forms of cancer and so forth?
Absolutely. When we are consuming, imagine, really, not imagine, but let me give it to you. Tomatoes actually have have the chemical lycopene in them. The chemical lycopene, or I'm using the word chemical as in alchemy, understand, but it that chemical goes directly to the prostate glands of men. When you are consuming ketchup, or if you're consuming cooked or fried potatoes or potatoes that are seriously processed in general, it then changes the molecular structure of the tomato and changes the molecular structure of the helpful chemical, which is lycopene in the tomato, which is support, which supports healthy prostate function. But if you are consuming a genetically modified or engineered organism, what is the key word in that? Transformation and change. Genetic. The key word is genetic. Genes recognize genes. You understand? So when they say genes recognize genes, really, for real, genes recognize genes. So with that being the case, when you consume that genetically modified or genetically engineered organism and it goes into your body and it genetically, and it goes to the lycopene goes directly to the prostate gland, then it's going to scramble the genetic information on your prostate cells, tissues, and its and the organ in general. With that being the case, this is what is this is the cause of the systemic malfunctions that we have today that our grandparents didn't have, our great-grandparents didn't have. You know, the prostate issues that overwhelm us today. We did have issues with prostate cancer and things like that, but we did not have them at early ages, like 50 years old. They were issues that were had or acquired at the age of 80, 90 years old, when sometimes, in a lot of cases of our great-grandparents, they were systemic wear out. The system or the organ has collapsed due to its over being worn out. But then we're experiencing a prostate shutdown at 50 years old, our generations are. The sad part about that is that men's male fertility is supposed to go on until long into his 80s, he can be fertile. Long into his 70s, he can be fertile. Well, unfortunately, today we're experiencing male menopause and prostate shutdown. And I feel that it is due a lot to the overconsumption of androgens, what we would call steroids, as such as estrogens in our chickens and our eggs or things like that, in beef. In addition to that, we're consuming genetically engineered produce that is attacking our genes and then even nullifying our ability to regenerate. It is vitally important for us to consider what type of fruit, vegetables, produce, meats, or any food that we put into our mouth, whatever you do. Because, you know, a lot of people are seeking to be raw foodists, so it's vitally important that once, as a raw foodist, you must be an organic food raw foodist, because eating it raw without cooking it, without processing it, matters. Also, those people who are whole foodists, who consume processed foods, which may include meat, does need to. You still need to be conscious. You still need to be very conscious of how your food comes to you, whether it is genetically modified or engineered or what have you.
So now, what's the best way to identify you know, the foods and to be able to determine which ones are genetically modified? I know they have the stickers and everything, so what's the process that you use to determine what foods you're going to purchase and how do you show other people how to identify the best quality
food.
Organic foods?
You know what? The key thing that you said was the best way. And let's start from there. The best way is to grow your own. The best way.
That's right.
You know, and that is a way that you will be infallible. Well, to the best of your ability and knowledge, I'm going to say totally infallible. I am going to say to the best of your knowledge and ability, yes. This is the way that you can determine what seeds you will purchase to put into your ground. You will determine how your, you know, soil was processed, and then you will also determine how your plants are grown. And that is the best way. But then as we go forward, it is to your benefit to even link in with local farmers in your area who also have your same mentality. You know, and that is the next best way, is if you cannot yourself grow them, then to link in with local black African farmers that are near you. Or there's now an upsurgence of Africans who are growing our own food and fighting to preserve our own health. There is an upsurgence, so it's not like you will not find them. You can. You'll find them. Thirdly, I would say, to trust your small health food store. Do not trust your large health food store, such as a Wild Oats or such as a Whole Foods or something to that effect. Because they are a big retailer, you cannot, their produce and things like that comes in from unknown places. But if you talk to a small health food store retailer, they usually know the growers of their food. And they know them enough to trust that this food is integrity. So I say, trust your small health food retailer. And that's all I have beyond growing it yourself, going to work with, because you should be volunteering your time with a local garden center. Or even a ranch or something to the effect where they're growing their food, you should be doing that, or going to a small health food retailer. You know how they have those stickers on there and things like that? This is going to sound a little silly, but I'm really looking for a little dirt underneath my carrot, you know, because I want to know that I don't want them to pre-wash my food. I want to, because even that is, what are they pre-washing my food with? You know, I want to know. So that's what I think.
That's key. That's important. So now, you also have there's a link on the bodytemple.name.com to the Sovereign Foods Collective. And
yes.
When you see the link, that you can go directly to that. And it's not just it's becoming more so of a movement amongst Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani people. And do you all also show and teach people, even in on a small scale, how to start their own organic farm in their area?
Yes.
Okay.
Every spring early, we do it usually at the end of February, where we begin to have Sovereign Food Collective classes. And if you are interested, I still have some of those classes on audio, which we will, which you can access. If you go into the forum, you'll be able to find some of those Sovereign Food Collective audios on the site that you can access. And you'll be able to hear some of the gardening experts, African experts that have helped us to garden with confidence, to grow our foods with more confidence. We broke down all types of topics from seeds and purchasing good seeds, garden construction, also vermiculture, utilizing worms to grow our own soil properly, also utilizing natural fertilizers, and meaning like mushroom compost, worm castings, and things like that. We've even gotten into constructing our own greenhouses as well as growing food and harvesting food. We have had one brother post up his pictures. If you look deep in our archives, there was a brother who posted his pictures. He grew in the projects where he lived. In his little green grass plot in front of his house, he grew watermelons, collard greens, all kinds of things, and he brought them too, and brought them in so healthy. I'm so proud of him. So we have been so blessed as to, so uplifted as to have such gardening experts as that brother, Brother Branson, in addition to Brother Jerry, who went to go learn with Will Allen, but brought back to the African community the science of composting. And he literally grows dirt. So he's been a very, very powerful influence for us. In addition to that, we have also had Bala Imhotep, whom has sat with us for many years, and his magnificent foods garden, and it's a great host. Oh, and we have been so honored to be able to welcome the brother Atiba Africa, or Energy Matters. So please look him up on Facebook. I'm so proud of him, because he is able to feed his whole family. He said he's able to feed over 20 people from his 1 acre farm. I'm so proud of him because wow. So he puts up, if you look into his pictures, you will be so enlightened on how simple it is and how extensive his knowledge is, how simple it is for us to grow, and how extensive his knowledge is to grow food and feed and support his, not only his family, but other families. So,
yeah,
he has Energy Matters on Facebook.
Yeah. Okay. And do you also have a link to his page on the Ning site as well?
No. On the Body Temple Ning site, no. You can find him and all of his pictures on Facebook.
Okay.
But you can find his audios amongst the audios on the Body Temple, and if you look under African Self-Preservation, the African Self-Preservation Conference workshop earlier this year, and he was amongst the presenters, and his audios are there on the site too. So if you go into the search engine at the top of the page of the Body Temple Institute, you will find the African, and type in African Self-Preservation, you will find those audios.
Okay. Okay, so we also have another question in the chat room. The question is, are the monatomic golds and silvers any good for various health benefits?
Colloidal silver, it has been used for antiviral issues and things like that. But as Africans, melanated Africans, metals are best worn in my experience. Now, we have gotten a lot of information offline, and a lot of information that is given to us, and a lot of our teachers speak a lot of monatomic gold. As a matter of fact, I did have some early in my pregnancy, this particular pregnancy that I'm in presently, as an immune system builder. I can say that the monatomic gold was a very... I was the only one taking it, and my immune system was strong enough to, there got to be a cold or small upper respiratory infection in my home, but I did not get it, and everyone else did. So I can speak of that. Have I done the extensive research on it? No, I have not done extensive research on it in order to say to you that it will do this and it will do that to your genes. As extensive as I've done on plants, leaf, stem, and root, and food. So I cannot speak on it as an expert on monatomic gold or silver or colloidal metals. I do feel that they are potent, and that they, and that is my experience with them. So.
Okay. You may not say for the question. So we, now we want to get into, so we talked about one principle of Hamayan Sesu is methods of food production and preservation. Another one is methods of curing disease, but then we also have dealing with institutions. We talked about those institutions, but now with the children, the next step, you know, you can feed yourself, you can heal yourself. Now it's time to have some children. So now you have the midwife process. So now you have a, you're doing something with midwives. So share with the audience the work you're doing in that area.
With the midwives, I have a website called The Mothership, and it's at themothership.wordpress.com, http, themothership.wordpress.com. And what I do is I do free childbirth education and I doula, as well as train childbirth educators and doulas. The intention is that there needs to be more African childbirth educators. We as Africans really don't remember, we don't think, we don't remember how to birth anymore. And that's a misnomer, double-edged sword, because on the other side, we do, we just haven't tapped into our genetic memory. We are so, we have become so surface that we do not rely upon or trust our genetic memory. We don't trust it when our spirit says something is wrong with what they're doing to me. And so we have to get back into, we have to get back that genetic memory. We have to get back to our intuitional confidence. So that's the intention of the mothership, is to create that network of mothers that support one another and the in the general knowledge of our innate birthing instincts. You know, and that's our we want to get back to our genetic remembrance of our intuitional ability to birth and our understanding that birth is so sacred that in our sacred birthing practices with spiritual concepts, with spiritual protectorances. The reason I'm saying this is that we have now, we don't realize it. We don't realize it, but we have embraced a birth culture of the Urdiwadifo, of the Yorugu, that is so damaging that we literally are harming our generations to come. We are consuming institutionalized food, and then we go into an institution to birth. And then once we birth in this institution, we are birthing, and the first face that our child sees is this white face that is masked. In addition to that, the next thing, that the first thing that the mother sees when she comes out of this dimensional state, and she's in a dimensional state of transit, of what is physically called transition, but this dimensional state is where she then travels in order to allow the spirit of the baby, this that baby's soul, to incarnate in that physical vehicle. So when she opens her eyes from pushing and from traveling, she sees this white masked face or this masked, medicalized, institutionalized face. This disembodied face, you know what I'm saying, that really does not look like me or really does not look like a woman. You know what I'm saying? Or doesn't look like a man, doesn't look like a black African, is now, has now infiltrated a sacred zone, a sacred space. And that sacred space, that institutionalized person dictates what happens in that sacred space. We as African women are trying, we call ourselves trying to get back and fight for, to have back our sacred space, but by having birthing plans or by having alternative births like water births, but inside of a birthing center. But we don't realize that institutionalized destructive mentality has infiltrated and perverted those sacred spaces. It is such a sacred space that birth is a ritual, and birth is a primordial, ancient ritual. It is so ancient that, as I explain it, the reason that I stumbled going into it is I want to explain it and give it its, I want to be effective in making sure I convey to my African sisters and brothers our ancestral inheritance, our ancestral birthright, our ancestral responsibility to make sure that we birth right. You understand? Our birthright is to make sure that we birth right and to make sure that each time we bring forth an ancestor and we bring it into the carnet or bring it into the flesh, that we see it as a most private and sacred ritual. And so with that, I am certifying birth workers and womb workers to help us as women to, one, reconnect all of our pieces, because we've been so fragmented in this society to where we don't even acknowledge our womanhood, our womb manhood, our sacredness. So we have to acknowledge that first in its entirety. And then we need to understand the most sacred ritual for which our vessels have been entrusted with, which is birth. And so in understanding each part and parcel and dimension of that responsibility with childbirth education. And then for a doula or a birth helper, for using a Greek word, but to understand so that now everybody's so familiar with this Greek word, but for using a birth aid, a helper, someone to help me to stay focused. You know, that I also certify doulas because we need to have someone to help us as African people to stay focused on what we're doing. We're bringing in another African ancestor from our genes, from our genetic memory, and we want that child's memory to be intact. We want that child's energetic framework, energetic matrix to be intact and unperverted or untampered with. We want that child, even the placenta that comes with that child, to be in to all of its parts, the parts of its vessel, to be intact and seen and untampered with. This is vital. This is quintessential to our survival. When you take it that seriously, Then it is that we will break their hold on our mentality. It is then that we will break their hold on our physicality. It is then that we will then become free, that we will then overstand the what it needs to take, what we're called upon to do, to take back our divine selves.
And it sounds like the certifications in that process are more like initiations for those sisters who are going to be bringing those ancestors back into the world.
It is, and it is an initiation because there is a spiritual component. There is a component of the certification studies that focuses in on how melanin reacts to certain foods, certain energy frameworks, certain bonds. And, you know, things that we are surrounded by. What is our environment? What's going on in our environment? That's important.
Now, how did you mentioned how when you birthed at home and you had the person working with you dealing with nothing but natural herbs and the entire process. So how do you help sisters who are contemplating having a home birth? How do you help them put structures in place so they can feel comfortable enough? I know they have to break that mentality of being dependent on the white narrow frame, but how do you get them to focus and get comfortable enough to recognize that, hey, we can do this and even do it much better and more effectively and more harmonious as a home birth than going to an institution?
Well, here's the thing. Everything that we as Africans do has to be a strategic act. It has to be a tactical act. Now, we heard those words in association with war, right? We are at war.
Right.
So with that being the case, that means that we have to even infiltrate the minds of our sisters. We have to infiltrate our communities of sisters. We have to go in and be able to bring our sisters together and in those sacred sister circles in order to unify them around the premise and principle of our wounds and the cleansing and healing of our wounds. So we have our birth workers, our educate and apprentice birth workers, womb workers. Womb workers, and what a womb worker's description, job, what does she do? A womb worker creates those sacred feminine circles for which she invites those sisters to come in. And let's say she's doing that Queen of Four womb wellness fast. We're talking about then when we are dealing with sacred woman and we're looking at the text of sacred woman and we're going over that text. A lot of people know that. Makes it very general. We're going over that text. We're also inculcating in that woman, planting seeds in that sister, how valuable she is. And inside of that value, we are introducing to her new methods of birth, new methods of healing her womb, new methods of detoxifying her body, new methods of, or methods she may not have heard of, a method she needs support in of detoxifying herself or cleansing her womb and having a relationship, spiritual relationship with her womb. We're also introducing to her the divinities that are guardians of our womb, you know, and we are sitting with them and doing ritual with them. We are spiritually connecting with other sisters because women are complementary beings. We're complementary at our core. This is why we share our vessel with babies. This is why we share our vessel with our men, because we are complementary. We're complementary beings. Men are as well in certain ways. Men are as well in our complement in their complementary way. We share our vessel with our children. So with such being the case, we complement each other also as women. We do this saying of, I don't, you know how we do this, I don't do women, I'm not, you know, I don't have any women friends. This is a very Willie Lynch concept that we have joined within and embodied. But that is not the nature of our being as the original woman. The nature of our being is complementary. So when we heal, we want to do it together. When we birth, we want to do it together. When we love, we want to do it with our complement. So with that being the case, those womb workers are our major agents of change agents, and they are our ones that go into the community and create those avenues for women to come together and to learn, for seeds to become fertile soil, for seeds to be planted in. In addition to that, for them to also go out and share this information with other women. So then that information gets multiplied. That information gets spread and dispersed to other women who need to know and understand how valuable that they are. That information goes even deep into not just how valuable they are, but how they should treat, take care of their natural bodies. In addition to that, the network. See, we arm our womb workers with so much information because not only are they teaching sacred a woman, but they're also connecting and networking these women with other with those childbirth educators, with those midwives, with those massage therapists, with those herbalists, with those other spiritualists, with those mom, with those EOS and those priestesses that can do readings for them. So connecting them, mind, body, and spirit, with other healers so that we can utilize the counsel and the help and then also utilize the naturopathic therapies of our African community integrity. It's a strategy. I am definitely a warrior, and it is a tactic Yeah, it's serious. Yeah.
It's serious. It's essential, and I know people are appreciating this information. This is the reason we wanted to, you know, expose you to as many people as possible, and just the great work that you all are doing. Somebody had a question in the chat room, going back a little bit to the food question. What staple foods can a family who lives in a concrete jungle rely upon for balanced meals?
You know what? I love your post on black food, and that is on the Body Temple website. And it was a very powerful one, speaking about black rice, the wild rice, and also utilizing foods that are high in color. I also talk a lot about colored foods for colored folks. You know, eating colors are vitally important. So what I would say is to name off a list. I definitely include seaweeds. Though they may not be indigenous to our part of the world, they are necessary for radiation detoxifying and cleansing, and that is something in the concrete jungle you can attain at maybe Oriental stores. I also utilize...
Which kind of seaweed are you talking about?
Wakami, nori, spirulina. There is that edamame and hazuki. But I don't really go off of, I don't really go into the deep to those, but you could. But I basically deal with wakami, nori, spirulina, and the spirulina powder comes in a powder form that I can mix with my smoothies or with my juices. And that is really good for, that is really good. Also, in a, you want to get that moringa for your daily smooth to add a little bit to your smoothies. You only need a little, and it goes a long way, just speaking about herbs in general. I also really, really feel that we should definitely deal with our and grow our bell peppers. Oh, wait. I forgot kelp. I don't want to forget kelp. That balances our hormones, things like that, and supports the healing of our thyroid gland. That's vitally important. Thyroid deals with our metabolisms and things like that, and also how we put out our hormones. So those women who have issues with PMS or who have issues with bloating or any type of menstrual syndrome issue or even menopausal issue or even during puberty, hormonal issues can also be supported by kelp. Kelp will help to balance. Your balance helps support balancing herbs for hormonal balance, so that's important. I also suggest that we eat those. If you're going to eat wheat, make sure it is whole wheat. If you're going to do rice, make sure it is long grain brown rice or black rice. I also suggest the yam, sweet potatoes. Try to get as good as a good quality of yam or sweet potato as you can. Go into those Caribbean stores or those into African stores, and they have even a. I don't necessarily trust like a white yam is too mucusy. Like when you cut it, even there's that white film that comes off of it. So I don't really like white yams at all. But doing the red yam or the or sweet potato yam is important. I also feel that we should do all, like I said, I keep going into peppers and what have you, and going into the tomatoes that we grow. Also the okra. Okra is vitally important to our genetic memory and to our digestive system. Going into beets, which are colors, and I know Dr. Sevi speaks against them, but I feel that the immediate need for your body to have iron is vitally important, beets and carrots. Also, we are in our greens. You already know about our greens. Africans love greens. So all of the greens, kale, collard, turnips, mustard, all of those are vitally important. I'm speaking heavily on our vegetables because they are very much a staple and very much can be prepared in many different ways. Also, utilizing our nuts. Cashews are African, are grown in Africa. Cashews are naturally good for us, as well as our almonds. Those are good staple foods, as well as they can be made into nut pates and nut milks for our babies. So our babies can really enjoy a nut milk made from almond, sunflower seeds, and banana, dates to sweeten. That's a good thing. Also, dates, speaking of dates, you want to keep dates around, and you want to make a good date syrup for your sweetener by taking dates and raisins and maybe pouring a little warm water and letting them steep, and that'll make a date syrup that can be poured over and sweetened for and used for sweetener. So medjool dates. So those are off the top of my head, not being on the internet or anything that I can think of in my pantry. I also use lentils. I also like lentils. I use red, yellow, and green ones. I enjoy those. Those are very good because they not only are they quick to cook and simple to cook, but you also have the essential nutrients that you need and fiber. Cabbages, red cabbage. The red cabbage is also very good because of the color. When I say eating colored foods is important, you need the nutrients that makes that vegetable fruit have a color. One of the things, the reason that I love deep leafy greens like spinach and greens, kale greens, collard greens, turnips, is because that chlorophyll literally is just one DNA different than red blood cells. Also in seaweeds, also it's just one. That chlorophyll is actually literally so similar to red blood cells that I have, instead of a blood transfusion, I've had one of my mothers who went into the hospital. I was not to be her primary physician. I was just giving her care. One of my mothers went into the hospital, and she ended up having to have a blood transfusion. She ended up losing a lot of blood and hemorrhaging a lot. I had her mother give her blackstrap molasses and spirulina, as well as beet juice from beets, the juice of beets and carrots. And she was able to. They came in to test her again after. Let's say the blood transfusion was due at 6 p.m., and at the time that they contacted me, it was 11 a.m. We had her drinking that with the spirulina and the beets and blackstrap molasses, and she came to a point where by the time they were ready to test her again in order to see how much blood they needed to give her, she literally had recovered a large amount of her blood volume. So she literally did not need a blood transfusion at that point. They tried to talk her parents and her family members into still letting them give her just one dose of a blood transfusion. But as the hours went past, her blood volume just continued to go up higher and higher, and she didn't even need one. So that's how serious it is to eat our chlorophyll-rich vegetables. In addition to that, vary your chlorophyll because the reds are chlorophylls too, the purples are chlorophylls too. So go ahead and eat those variables also.
Okay. And we there was another question related to that. One person asked, she bought some short grain brown rice. She wants to know if we should not eat it and why, and should we soak the rice?
Oh, go ahead and eat that. Brown, short grain, long grain, that's fine. I'm giving the best, you know, just giving the best. And long grain brown rice is a natural brown rice. I do not, short grain brown rice is not is not a it's a breed. It is not an engineered example. So it is a breed. There are we literally in America are only getting about 5 to 6 breeds of one species of plant. You've only seen a couple of tomatoes, a couple of different types of bell peppers, a couple of different types of rice, a couple of different types of apples. They keep us locked into a matrix of types. Isn't it interesting that when blood oranges came on the scene, that was a surprise to us because when we grew up, we didn't grow up eating blood oranges unless you lived in the islands or in a deep tropical area. We didn't have exposure to blood oranges. But there are oranges that are literally red on the inside. I'm sure that you've seen them now. They're pretty widely dispersed. There are also different types of apples. There are also different types of rices that we've never even been exposed to. So I'm saying that because, yes, definitely, yes, you can eat the short-grain brown rice. Forgive me, just long-grain brown rice came to me first.
Okay.
Brown rice
and actually,
is the key.
And
whole grain organic brown rice is the key, though. And when I say whole grain, not split. You know how, what do they do with Uncle Ben's? Don't they cut it to make it quick? Or it's parboiled and they split it to make it cook quicker and things like that. They literally have brown rice that is parboiled and things like that. Don't buy those. Make sure that it is whole, a whole grain.
Okay. And in that vein, when you mentioned the different kinds of foods and everything, we found that very often they'll talk about spirulina and they'll talk about it from the Aztecs or other places, but it's been grown in Chad in central Afrika, just east of, just west of Sudan for over 1,000 years. So that's actually a market we need to connect with so we can start bringing that Chadian spirulina, you know, to people here in the West. But,
I have an article about that also on the Body Temple website.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. Spirulina in Africa.
So now we went from food preservation and cultivation to medicine, the birthing of the babies. But then after the babies are born, they have to be educated, and of course you have a program for that. You got the homeschooling network. The whole piece.
Well, I'm really just trying to live. This is what I need to live, right? This is what we need to support ourselves. You know, so basically just having these institutions here is basically an outcropping of people asking me, Mawusi, how do you do this? So instead of just telling the story 5,000 times, I put it on the website so that people can access the information. And then also to access the resources that they need in order to do it themselves also. That's necessary. Like, we don't realize how much, we have to do to undo the strategies and tactics that have been used against us. War has been made upon us long before we were. There's an African proverb that says, when the fool arrives to the game, the players have dispersed. So when it comes down to it, there is so much that we have not received. There was something we don't know or don't remember. We don't even know how to fight this battle. So what I can do is to leave battle strategies, plans, and tactics for people to find. That's my intention. So with that, the Akokonan Free School Resource Center, we had to move, so I changed the name to Free School Resource. AkokonanFreeSchoolResources.com, www.akokonanFreeSchoolResources.com is a homeschool or independent school resource center. So those mothers and fathers who may want to co-op, first of all, homeschool their child, or gather with other African parents to co-op, be a co-op, homeschool co-op, or even create an independent African school. There are resources on there, lesson plans, as well as whole African Asili unit studies based upon our perspective, our viewpoint, and the African worldview that is on the site. That's the intention, is to spread the awareness, to spread the education and information to our children. Our issue is that there is an oversaturation for us as homeschoolers of European information for free, because Europeans want to survive. So they have put out information on everything from growing food to educating your children to learning strategies to, you know, study guides, everything for free for their people. And my intention was to do my best to put out as much information as I could for free for my people, because we are losing the battle through our children. Our children, we may be learning and studying and absorbing the information from the different websites, from the different learning about historical information, from the different lectures and speakers that are out there. But our children are malnutrition when it comes to that. Our children are coming home from public school, and we don't even recognize them, and they don't recognize us. Our children have been on another front line, and they have been perverted, and they're coming home, and they are looking at us like we are absolutely out of our mind as we walk around speaking our native language. And the enemy has made them wisdom proof to the extent that when we speak to them in our African language, they do not understand what we're saying. When we feed them our African foods, the European has created artificial foods and restaurant foods to literally be sealed and impervious to being able to be penetrated by this genetic information. So we have to, when you take a look at that, when we look around at our family members, we look at their children, we take a look at our, you know, sometimes our own children, we see how this enemy has literally infiltrated our children and then sent them back into our homes to become enemies against us. We have to literally arm our children, take our children behind African lines instead of putting them out front and putting them up on a bus to send them away to us to a school. We need to bring them home. And that, I know that what I'm saying is a pretty serious, it's a sacrifice for some people. It's a pretty serious thing. And in all honesty, my family has sacrificed a lot. You know, and sometimes, you know, they say it's a one family income or one income in our family or whatever. Yeah, but sometimes it was no income. You know what I'm saying? But still, everybody, let's get your papers out. We're still homeschooling today. You know what I'm saying? We're still on the homeschooling piece. So my six children are very clear on the battle and the struggle that their parents have fought to keep them safe and to make sure that they have the proper food, they have the proper healing, they have the proper spiritual sense that they need in order to survive. It is not for them to be intellectually, what's going to matter to their survival is not their being able to regurgitate information given to them by the Ajiwadifo. What's going to support their survival is for them to be able to intuit information from their ancestors. That is what is going to ensure their safety, success, and survival.
Absolutely. So how long have you been doing the homeschooling as far as the network and inviting other people who are trying to connect with the network? How long has that been going on, and how is it going, and what kind of support do you need from the community?
My oldest child is 19 years old. Education does not just end with quote-unquote the ending of high school, or for us it's called the core curriculum. it doesn't end with the core curriculum, but I have been homeschooling for 19 years, including all of those years. I have been aiding other parents in homeschooling their children since 1967, because then that's when they got old enough for me to begin to accumulate worksheets that I had created for them, books that I had created, you know, books that I had attained, and I could share them with other mothers and inspire other mothers and fathers to consider homeschooling their children and have some evidence to be able to show them. Because that's, you know, we as African people, we want to see the fruit of your tree. So if the fruit of your tree looks like it's not really doing that well, then we don't want to follow in your footsteps, or we don't want to do what you're doing. But if the fruit of your tree looks very well seasoned, very well rounded, very much, you know, gotten what all it needs, then other people feel like that's something worth looking at. So by the time we reached like 1996, 1997, my two girls, I had had two girls, 96, my third child, 97, and the oldest two were able to, were reading, or not reading yet, excuse me, but they were able to write their names, as well as they were very articulate and able to tell other children their numbers in Swahili, as well as we were learning Spanish also. So they knew their numbers to, you know, about 20, I think, at that time, because they were like three and four. They were able to do that, to do their numbers, and they were very articulate. By the time that they were 4 and 5, they were reading small books that we created and some books that we found in the library. By the time that everyone was, by the time we had reached an age of 6, 7, and 8, because the children were like 6, 7, and 8, my 8-year-old was reading 600, 700-page novels and things like that. So we had gotten pretty far. So at the end, when we had reached the age of where my oldest was 6, and I took a look at the children who were in school and what school had produced, and then I took a look at what I produced, I just took a leap, and I decided, you know what, I'm not going to even have my children be dumbed down by the school system. I'm not doing it. So I just went maroon on everybody and just didn't take them to school and didn't enroll them. To date, we have graduated the oldest two children in 2011. We graduated a child from our community in 2012, and I will be graduating my oldest son, who is 17, who is that child born in 1997. He will be graduating this fall, probably late fall. And then my 15-year-old, who will be 15 soon, he will be graduating this coming June 2015. He is my program, or my core curriculum concept, are taught from an African Asili perspective, and I also am, I'm going to use the word, I'm just going to, you know, just put it out, I'm thug enough to not feel that college is good enough for my children. So I prepare all of them to be entrepreneurs. And any child who comes through my core curriculum, I prepare them to be self-sufficient in regards to their health. They graduate as master herbalists. They also graduate as entrepreneurs, and they are able to be self-sufficient, self-sustaining. Now, this, when I say thug about thug, it's because not everybody agrees with that concept. And not everybody feels confident in that concept. But for me, that is the only way I can see. When I prepare a child outside of the system, then I'm going to keep them outside of the system. I'm not going to prepare them to send them into the world. I'm preparing them to be self-sustainable and to follow the 7 principles that you outlined earlier, you know, for African self-preservation. So to support, this is the first thing that I need from the greater African community, is that when you see a homeschool family, to support them in your area, in your local area. There are many ways to support them, and it's not just money. One way to support them is to defend them. What's very interesting now is that we are so confused as an African body, as a body of black people, that we will slander their homeschool parents. You know, they so stupid. They don't know what they're doing. They're talking about they're going to homeschool the child. You know how we do. Defend that parent. Defend that family. Defend the child. And make sure that family has everything that family needs. That family needs workbooks. If that family needs a printer, that you may have one at your house. If that family needs links and resources, you know, help them to find the links and resources or the support that they need in order to do it. Babysit for them one night so that they can even get out. As an African person having African values, that African parent will be grateful to have someone of a like mind to support them. So that is the foremost thing that I say. Support them by defending them. Support them by helping them find the resources that they need. Support them by giving them confidence and courage in what they're doing is the right thing to do. Because everyone from the grocery store clerk to the neighbor down the street has an opinion on what we should do with our children. So with that, we should be those ones. Those African people should be the first ones to step up and support.
Absolutely. And the program you all are putting forward is revolutionary and resolutionary, as we talk about. So we want the entire listening audience to share this information with your people, with your contacts, see what you can do to support the different initiatives, the Sovereign Food Collective, the Akokonan, you know, homeschool network, the, you know, herbalist certification, everything. There was a question going back to the birthing piece in the chat room. Can a woman deliver vaginally after a C-section?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are told by our physicians that we cannot, but you can absolutely have a baby after a C-section. As a matter of fact, you have to remember that a European womb is not as strong as an African womb. Our ability to heal and regenerate is exponentially more than theirs. So a mother who has had a C-section needs to be on that absolute mission to not take her body for granted, but to fortify her body with the melanin-supporting foods that she can, that, you know, she knows will support that melanin, that melanin which helps to regenerate her womb. So absolutely, she can have a vaginal birth after a C-section. Now, what will be a, because I'm going to give both sides, what will be a drawback for us as African women? Our psychology, our spiritual and emotional self. Have we done the work on our spiritual and emotional self? The issue here is how much have we concentrated on our consciousness. And we sometimes have allowed ourselves to be made victims to this Yorugu, this Urduwadufo, and they have told us things that were 100% erroneous, and they have done things to us that to us seem irrevocable. You must begin to defend your psychology, your mentality, your spirituality, yourself. You must begin to defend that, and you must defend it by concentrating on consciousness daily. Now, I have had mamas whom have been perfectly healthy, able to birth, whom have asked me, and they're perfectly healthy and able to birth after C-section, but have asked me with the eyes of a victim, do you think it's possible? Oh, my gosh, I don't think it's possible. Well, it's because what is the key word in my statement? I don't think it's possible because that's what they told you. You have to change your mentality. You have to change what you think. You have to not just, and then in the back of the day they said, change your mind and your ass will follow. And that is real. That is absolutely real. The proof in the pudding is in the Everest Papyrus, like I said, over 5,000, no, so many thousand years ago, that we placed in it rituals, which are focal points, actually, to change the psychology of our body temples. And when our body temples accept the fact that we are divine and literally that we are self-generating, then we will regenerate. We will self-vitalize ourselves, revitalize ourselves. And we will stop harming ourselves and hurting ourselves and literally destroying ourselves from our mind down. And we will begin to change our mentality. So that is the key. Yes, one, absolutely, yes, you can birth after a cesarean. Number two, absolutely, yes, you will do it if you can heal your mental mindset and how you think. And if you can also make sure that you consume vital foods that support your vitality and melanin. Melanin is that key to generating and regenerating our tissues and cells quickly and a lot quicker than the herbal waterfall Yoruba people.
Okay, may I say, and they had, there was another question. He said his last question has to do with the purple plates used to take toxins out of foods and water. Have you heard of them? And if so, are they any good?
Say it again. Restate the first part of the question.
He said the purple plates used to take toxins out of foods and water. Have you heard of them? And if so, are they any good?
Purple plates. No, I've never heard of them. I've never heard of them. But that does not mean they do not work. I don't know. That may be. I've never heard of them. That may be an innovative thing. I don't know. I personally prefer to use my crystals. I do use my quartz stones to take toxins. I do use my the sun to energize my water. I do use my spirulina to put nutrients, just a bit of spirulina to put nutrients in my water. So that's what I use. I have not used any or even heard of anyone using purple plates.
Now, how would you use the crystals for the water to purify?
I have a glass jar of water, and I will sink my crystal into the water and let it sit in the window that the sun is coming in, so a south-facing window, so that gets full sun, and allow it to re-energize my water, and then also to purify. Also, alkaline water is a big deal now. And we have seen, as Africans, we have seen a big difference in alkaline water, or in water that is pH balanced. I would suggest water that is pH balanced. We kind of take things and run with it, take all the new innovations and run with it. But you can get a disorder called alkalinosis, which makes you kind of lethargic. If you overindulge in too much alkaline, but alkaline water can be used medicinally for those who are too acidic, those whom consume flesh, those who consume a lot of starches. Because even if you're a vegetarian and consume a lot of starches, you'll find that your urine or your blood samples may be very acidic. You can balance your pH by taking in alkaline water. So balancing our intention as people is to be balanced. And juicing also. Taking in through juicing, fruits and vegetables can also alkalinize your bloodstream.
But now with the pH balanced water now, what would you say is the best source or how to bring that balance naturally?
I've been researching that. I'm researching that and how we can do that. Now, of course, I do utilize my spirulina in my water to alkalinize the water. The seaweed
okay.
help. And so that's what I would say. There are more ways, though, of alkalinizing the water, like by using lemon in your water also. So that's an age old to put lemon in our water.
Okay. And that, now with the lemons, though, it would be just sliced lemons, including the rinds, or do you remove the rinds and just use the inside?
It depends on where you got those lemons from. I don't trust any lemon I didn't grow.
Okay.
I don't grow lemons, so I would go ahead and squeeze the lemon inside. Like the outside, you know what I'm saying, the rind of the lemon. I'm concerned about if they sprayed them or whatever. So if you get that organic lemon, go ahead and squeeze it in your water. And then take a whole lemon or a half a lemon, depending on your taste, and you can squeeze it in a gallon jug of water for your family.
Okay. Okay, so we covered a lot. We only have a few minutes left. And we're really honored that you came on the show. You gave so much information. Of course, you have to come back, you know, whenever you want to. It's always an open invitation. Come back. The website, of course, we posted. In fact, can you give me the Akoko 9 link again?
It is www.akoko9freeschoolresources.com. www.akoko9free, freeschool, resources. So akokonan, F as in free, freeschool, resources, resources.com.
Okay, that was it.
Did you find it? Okay. Okay, good.
Okay, there it is. All right, we got it now. Okay, and I know you done some, also quickly before we were out, I know you've done some, presented at some different conferences dealing with homeschooling and so forth. So how did those go?
Oh my gosh, this has been a phenomenal time. I got to the honor to be able to present at Liberated Minds Educational Expo, Black Educational Expo in Atlanta. And it was phenomenal because I got to connect with the mothers whom were homeschoolers, and some had homeschool in their homes. Queen Thais with Roots to Fruits, Mama Nikita with Each One Teach One. And I am so proud and honored to be amongst the ranks of those mothers, and to also be able to offer them resources that help make their job a lot easier. Also, I got to meet a lot more parents who were dipping their toe in the waters of considering homeschooling their children or taking their children out of abusive systems, and to talk them into really being confident and taking the step to freeing their children. And that was powerful for me, and it was moving for me to be able to help them to navigate the mind screw that this society has given us, and to help them to be able to bridge the gap for their children, to free their children from abusive systems. Then just this past weekend that I get to participate in the African-Centered Educational Conference, for which my place was to speak about and empower homeschooling parents, or parents who were going to free their children from the system. And in essence, I was to tell my story. And I was excited to get to share with them, my family, whom was all present, and we were able to get to share our what life gifts and lessons have we learned from being able to have all of our time ourselves, for ourselves, you know, and not having to include in our mental knowledge information of the 50 presidents of the United States, not to have to include in our knowledge Babe Ruth in his highest score or whatever, you know what I'm saying, all of the European cultural seeds that they plant in you, you know, to get to what does that look like. I got the opportunity to show what does that child look like that has not been infiltrated by a European mentality, or that has not been oppressed or impressed upon by European media. And I was excited to get to show that. So those two conferences just recently have been very powerful for me. And I hope to do more.
Okay. And again, we just, I'll say again, it's 10:56, so we're about done. Everyone who's listening, please support Mama Mawusi, support the organization, support the homeschooling, support the midwifing program, support the, you know, dealing with the herbs and certifications and everything that's being done. The Sovereign Foods Collective, all these different elements, all key to our revolution and resolution, key to our independence, key to our sovereignty in the real sense. And we have people out here who are engaged in these various areas 24/7, day in and day out. They're not just philosophizing about this. They're actually putting these things into practice and rooted in our ancestral culture. They're not rooted in Islam or Christianity or something like that. They're dealing with our ancestral culture, and that births these wonderful, harmonious institutions. So please support these institutions in any way that you can. And again, Mama, we made our say, and you can come back whenever you want to. Just let us know.
I'm grateful. I'm grateful, and I'm grateful to get to that you contacted me, because I was just like, oh, my gosh, anything that you need, Baba, anything, I'm here. You just let me know.
Made us say. Okay, and we will be connecting with everyone next week. Akamfom Nanasom on Joada, Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we will be updating you with regards to the next upcoming presentation on September 6th in Philadelphia. Check the website, odirafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F as in free, O.com. You can also contact us on our social network, apuraka-apurakayet.ning.com. You can also connect with us in our Akanto Nanasom Facebook group. So, Yerase, we thank you for tuning in. We will connect with you next week. Yebeshia.
We are.